Hi guys, my name's Katie. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is January 31st, 2013. And my home group is this meeting right now, YPG, on Thursday nights. And I'm just really grateful to be able to be here tonight and celebrate, you know, 2 years with all of you guys. And if it weren't for you, I probably wouldn't be standing here right now. And if it weren't for my higher power, I wouldn't be standing here right now. And the one person that has gotten me through, you know, so much in the past year and a half, like thick and thin, super, super huge inspiration to me is my sponsor, Jesse, and that's who I chose for me to speak tonight. So, welcome, Jesse. I'm Jesse, I'm an alcoholic. I brought my phone up here because I normally wear a watch and I forgot it this morning, so I'm that person that I hate who brings their phone up to the podium. So let's just get that out there. They say in AA, you become what you judge. It's very accurate. My sobriety date is August 2nd of 2010. I have a home group. It's this one. I have a sponsor, and I have the distinct honor of sponsoring other women, such as Katie. And yeah, man, like it talks about in the big book that, you know, it's a bright spot of our lives, and it truly, truly is. It's been an honor to watch Katie in this journey and a joy to be a part of it. You know, I've known Katie since she was like fresh out of treatment, and God, I love a new girl. You know what I mean? Like, I love a crazy ass new girl. Sorry, I'm gonna try really hard not to swear, but I do that a lot. It's all right. It's a learning process. But I don't know. Like, it's been such a joy to be a part of her life and to, you know, watch her grow and become a God-centered woman and, you know, get to be a part of somebody's life getting put back together. You know, I gave Katie her 1 year medallion last year, and I told this story, but, you know, I remember I was with one of my good friends and Katie right when she got out of treatment. She'd been sober like a little over a month, and we went to Carrabba's because, you know, they were going out to dinner, but she didn't really want to hang with the group, and she was, you know, real crazy. And, you know, I've been taught that, you know, when you're like that, you need to be surrounded by the people in AA. So that's what we did. We took her to dinner, and she about her life and everything in it for like the entire time we were at dinner. My mom is so, she's constantly wondering where I'm at and what I'm doing, and she doesn't believe me, and she wants to see my chip when I pick it up every month, and at this meeting they didn't have one, and she's not going to believe me, and everything. And she would call me all the time about all this stuff, and my mom, and she's yelling at me, and she's asking me to do things for her, and like, I just can't believe it, and she doesn't trust me. You know, and it's so much fun to watch that, because, like, not only did I have that experience of being in that moment and in those situations, but I've come to the other side where I've had my family's respect and trust come back, and I've had the honor of watching that happen in Katie's life. You know what I mean? Her mom's here tonight, and they have such an incredible relationship, and they're so close, and, you know, Katie's mom trusts her today, and that's, like, just one of the incredible things that happens, you know, here when you work the steps and you take these uncomfortable, counterintuitive actions that are, you know, talked about in the big book. We get such incredible gifts, you know, and I'll go, you know, pretty quickly through my experience with that, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. You know, I'm weird. I've been weird. I had a real weird, like, growing up situation, but nothing, like, on the outside, you know what I mean? Like, I hear a lot of speakers talk about how they felt different and apart from and disconnected, and I'm a follower through and through, and I, for years in AA, I would say that stuff, and, like, that wasn't my experience. Like, I didn't feel weird and disconnected and apart from. Like, I was weird. I knew that, and people told me about it, but I did always feel like I didn't know what to do with my hands on a regular basis. Like, I always just was like this all of the time. And You know, and that I remember. And I learned here, like, that was a form of self-centered fear. But I didn't know that. I just knew, like, I was really loud. I had braces forever. If I liked a guy, like, and I'm talking up into high school, I would just, like, yell at them. I would get really awkward and uncomfortable. And I wasn't cool at all. And I just wanted to be cool. Oh, my God. That's all I ever wanted was to be popular. And, and I didn't, like, turn into, like, a woman form of a person until I was, like, 17. So there was nothing about me that anybody wanted to hang out with. You know what I mean? Like, dudes weren't interested. Girls thought I was weird. But I just, like, that was my, like, I just wanted you to like me. Like, I wanted to fit in. And I wasn't allowed to do anything that everybody else was allowed to do. My parents are, like, still really overprotective. You know, and I couldn't get in the car with people when they had their license. Like, if you didn't have your own child, you couldn't drive me around, and that was just not a good look, you know. All my friends are doing stuff and going to parties, and, like, not Jessie, she's got to go home at, like, 8 o'clock at night, and, you know, at, like, 18. But, so, you know, and, like, my parents are super good, normal, well-adjusted people, and I didn't have, you know what I mean? Like, my mom spent some time in AA. My parents got divorced, you know, when I was little. But nothing that happened or was circumstantial in my life, I feel, has anything to do with my alcoholism. You know what I mean? Like, I learned in here that I'm an alcoholic because when I drink, I have no control over the amount I take. And there's something in my head that says, like, this time it's going to be different. You know what I mean? I have this obsession of getting the next drink, and then I think it's not going to be like it was last time. And then, you know, the other part is, like, when I want to not drink, I drink anyways. And that's what makes me an alcoholic. Not that my parents got divorced, not that my mom smoked crack. Like, none of that stuff has anything to do with that. It just is what it is, you know. And my first, I don't know, like, I know I drank before the day that, like, will forever remain in infamy. But none of those times did it do what it did for me. This coming Saturday, like 10 years ago. And I went to Gasparilla, and I'm from here. I've been here my whole life in South Tampa, and I went to Gasparilla every year since I was, like, small-er. And this was the first year that I was allowed to go with, like, not adult supervision, like, loosely supervised. Like, there were parents of my girlfriend who were going to be there, but we didn't have to hang out with them. And it was the weekend. Gasparilla's always been, like, the weekend before, during, or after my birthday, and it happened to be the weekend before my Sweet 16. And this was around the time that show, My Super Sweet 16, had come out. And so it was like, you had to have this retardedly elaborate birthday party for children. It was just, you needed to or you were a loser. And so that's what I was doing. I had these other two girls. We planned this huge party and invited all these people, and, like, I was going to make it. Like, I was going to be popular. It was going to be great. And so I go to Gasparilla with my girlfriends, and there was this guy who had a Camelback full of this, like, amazing concoction, and he offered it to me. And, like, I am so wildly uncomfortable all of the time. Like, I don't like to ask people for where stuff is in the grocery store. Like, I'm just terrified of humans. And I say no to everything and everybody, and I, like, get in my little turtle shell and hang out. And this kid was like, he offered me and my friends this stuff in his backpack drink. And I said yes, because I just, like, I really, really, really want to be cool, and I'm not at all. And so I drank it out of the little apparatus that I don't even know how to work it. Like, I couldn't even try and use a Camelback if I tried. But I drank and drank and drank and drank and drank until he was like, whoa, I meant, like, do you want to try it? Not, would you like to consume the entire contents? And what happened was, I mean, it wasn't even 10 minutes later. I remember every single thing that happened, because I was skipping down one of the streets, and everything was incredible. Like, I felt alive. You know what I mean? Like, it was the, bar none to that point in my life, the most amazing experience I had ever had. And I knew. Like, there was no, like, oh my gosh, what is this? You know, like, I knew. It was because I had just drank that stuff. Like, I didn't really put two and two together that I was drunk or getting drunk, but I just knew, like, that thing I drank made me feel like this. I need more. And my experience was a little bit different than Jeremiah's, because, like, I became amazing instantly. You know what I mean? Like, everybody wanted to be my best friend. I was hysterical. All the guys were suddenly realized I was in existence. And it was great, you know, and I was just, everybody wanted to be Jesse's best friend right then. And I knew that was because of the stuff I had drank. And I also knew that that feeling might go away. And I mean, like, from day one, that's how I drank. And so what happened was I decided to get more of anything I could that day and just got annihilated. And I don't remember a whole lot of what happened, but there were a few key things that transpired. I blacked out, for sure, you know, and everything that I was told was, well, I was told of what had happened. I don't remember any of this. But I got caught because I'm not a good liar, and my parents, like I said, they're like really overprotective, so they came to pick me up, and I was like a pukey, gross, cry mess, and they knew that I had been drinking, so I had quite a few consequences immediately. Like, I had to cancel that party with those two girls and tell my whole entire school that wasn't happening anymore. My dad made me, they just put on this huge addition of their house, and in my disgusting hangover the next day, he had me like sweep the entire thing, which at the present time in my life, I felt like it was the size of this gymnasium, and he just had me like sweep concrete dust, which if you've ever tried to sweep concrete dust, it's not like a really, it doesn't work. It takes like 10 hours, and it was horrible, and I was just the sickest I've ever been in my life, and so people at school were telling me all these stories, right? Like, I puked in a Starbucks, and I made out with my friend's 12-year-old brother, and I dismantled a chip display at a gas station. Like, all these great claims to fame, right? And I didn't remember any of that, so I thought everybody was lying because they were jealous of how awesome I had become, like, over 10 seconds of my life. But the moral of the story is, like, I just really didn't care. Like, I really, 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 to my soul, did not care. You know what I mean? Like, the party was canceled. That was, I'm sure it was embarrassing at the time, but I don't remember that pain now, you know? And the things people were telling me, I'm sure it was slightly uncomfortable, but, like, I don't remember that pain. I remember what it felt like when I drank, and I loved it. Like, I loved it more than I loved breathing air, I think. Like, it was my favorite thing, and I wanted to do it every chance I could, and that was what I set out to do, you know? Every chance I got, I was drinking, and my parents were like, so, what are you doing? Who are you with? Checking the phone records, all that kind of stuff, so it was not easy. I tried to drink my parents' alcohol at home, because they're not big drinkers at all, and I would, like, refill the vodka with water, and then I would get yelled at, like, 6 months later when they drank it. It was really watered down, but I would do things like, I mean, I spent the rest of my high school career trying to get drunk whenever I could, and I would make friends with girls that I knew didn't have curfews, so I could, like, but Mom, I have to spend the night at Sarah's house, she's my best friend, you know, only because I knew we would, like, go out to parties, and, like, we could stay out all night, you know, and I did a lot of really dangerous, reckless stuff. I liked to meet people online and sneak out of my house and go drink with these people. And, you know, and I would always, like, I would try and I would lie to my parents. Like, I'd have them drop me off at the movies, and then I'd have other people pick me up, and we'd go get drunk. And then I'd come back, and my parents would come to pick me up, and I'd be, like, on some kind of website trying to figure out, like, what movie I just pretended to see. And I was lying about everything, and I was constantly getting caught because I'm not clever at all. And, you know, like, my parents started alarming me into my room at night, and there was a period of time where they took all my clothes away and stripped my room down to nothing, and, like, that was part of my punishment. There was always, like, my parents are so creative. If I ever have kids, they're screwed. Like, you know, toothbrush scrubbing the floor, no, that's child's play. You know, but they tried. God bless those people. They tried to keep me in line, and I was just not interested, you know? And I started experiencing things, and, like, I haven't even graduated at this point, but I started experiencing things like I'd go to a party, and there'd be, like, a case of beer, and that is not sufficient for more than me, you know? And I feel like I experienced at some point running out of beer at a party. So what I would do is I'd start hiding things in, like, the crisper drawer and under the couch. And, you know, like, the second I would get to anywhere, I would find the stuff and I would hide it. Because I knew at some point, like, either y'all were going to pass out because you're just not on the right level, or we were going to run out and I'd be able to, like, go get what I needed, you know? Because, like, I'm sure I don't look of age right now. At 15, like, I was not walking into a liquor store. I still ordered off, like, the kids' menu and got into Busch Gardens for free. But so, somehow, by some miracle, and that's my parents, I graduated high school, and I got into college, and I was going to go to college, and it was going to be great, and then I got afraid. Like, that's really what happened. I was dating this guy, and he said something like, oh, long distance? I don't know. And I was like, college? Who needs that? I'll come live in Fort Myers with you, and it's going to be great. But the other part was that I had to, I only had, like, partial scholarships, so there was, like, it's so funny thinking about it now, because it's, like, God, what I wouldn't give to have that situation, but I had to come up with, like, $1,000 a semester for school, like, and I was like, no, there's no way, like, that's so much working, I can't, you know what I mean, there's no way I can do that, and so I left Tallahassee, where I was going to go to school, and everything in me said, when I get to Fort Myers, I'm just going to transfer all my stuff, and I'm going to go to college there. Like, I swore I would have put it on my life, I would have put it on my family, you know what I mean? And that's kind of how my theme is. It's, like, always with these great intentions. Like, I'm going to do this stuff. Like, I really, really mean it. And, you know, and something always gets in the way, you know? My mom wrecked my car. I was like, oh, it's the day I was going to go to admissions. See? Like, that's not my fault, you know? And I never went back to college. And, you know, and so I lived in Fort Myers for a while. And, you know, and like, everything I was doing, I always, like, had this delightful skill of rationalization. Like, I can convince myself of just about anything. I don't know if, like, anybody else has that experience, but I can tell myself that the world is flat, and I will believe it for sure. So I would, you know, like, anytime things would get weird or sketchy, I was always like, oh, you know, there's nothing wrong with the way I'm living. It's so-and-so's problem, or it's whatever. And so I was living down in Fort Myers for a while, and I started to get in trouble, legal, with, like, the law and stuff. And I wasn't working, and I was partying with my mom all the time. And I had this, like, self-righteous, just nasty attitude towards my mom for years, where I was just like, well, you were a terrible mother, so you need to buy me booze and give me your car and shut up. And that's kind of how I acted, you know. And I was living with her for a while, and I was partying all the time, and then I got in some legal trouble, and I thought, like, okay, well, obviously my mother is the problem, because she's a mess, and I just need to get it together and get a job. And I got this job managing this kid's shoe store, and it was great. I was, like, in charge of things, and the coolest part was that, like, the mall opened at 10, so if I got there at 9:55 and I, like, zombied up for a minute, I could kind of keep it together until this little girl would come in for her, like, after-school job, and then she would just run the show, and I would take a nap in the stock room. I brought in a pillow and blankets and, like, had this whole situation set up in the stock room, and I'd, like, put boxes up in case people came into the store so they would get knocked over, and I'd, like, wake up. It's horribly, horribly disgusting. And I didn't shower a whole lot throughout that period. You know, and from my perspective at the time, I really thought, like, if I was at FSU, everybody would be living like this. You know what I mean? Like, it's not that big of a deal. I'm 20 years old. Everybody drinks, you know. And I had got this dog, and because I thought that was going to be a really good idea. Like, I can't put gas in my car, but I can totally take care of an animal. I didn't brush my hair for, like, 6 months, and it was this thing. You know, but, like, I, obviously, an animal, best idea of ever, you know. And she ate dog food occasionally when my roommate wasn't home. I'd steal her dog food. She ate birthday cake for, like, 6 months at one point. I couldn't take her out, you know what I mean? Like, she would sit in her crate for 18 hours, you know. I didn't feel like this then, but when I got sober, I felt like I had these blinders, you know what I mean? Like, I can see that, and I can do that, and that's it. Whatever's in front of me, get to work, okay, we can do that. Stop and get gas? No. Take the dog for a walk? You're crazy. Like, I just couldn't do normal human things. Like, I couldn't get groceries, I couldn't vacuum, my house was disgusting, there was just dog poop and pee everywhere, it was atrocious, but, like, I really believed if I was at college, because I'm at that age, like, everybody would live like this. It's not weird. It's fine. You know, and I always had some friend who was a little bit more sketchy than I, so I'd be like, well, you know, at least I'm not that guy on the floor stuck to the ground in this disgusting bar, you know, and eventually I was. But at that point, no, it's not a big deal. And, you know, and then some stuff went missing from the store I was working at, and the only person to look at had a record, and that was me. And so I called my dad, because that's what I do, and I hadn't spoken with my father, like, really honestly in a long time. And I was like, you know, they want me to take this polygraph, but it's going to be fine, because I didn't do it. So, and I was, like, in such a delusion that I had no idea, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't know what delusion was, I didn't know any of that. I just thought, that, you know, people were out to get me, or I don't even know what I thought. I was so crazy and malnourished and unkempt. It was gross. You know, but, like, I had no idea. You know what I mean? Like, I couldn't see any of that. It just was what it was. And, but, so I was telling him about this lie detector test that, like, it's fine. And, he got slightly alarmed at that idea and hired me an attorney, and I was, like, already on probation at this point, so it was gonna be real bad. I was gonna go to prison, because there were no more opportunities to, like, go to jail and all that stuff. Like, no, you're gonna go. And so he, basically what he told me, he was like, get your stuff, get in your car, and get to St. Pete right now. This is where we live. We're gonna, like, get your stuff together. You're gonna go to school, you're gonna do something with your life. Like, yes, perfect, great idea. I'm going to be a grown-up. This is going to be great. I'm going to get it together. Because there was a moment before, I mean, I didn't make the decision, before I was informed I was going to be moving to St. Pete, that, like, I just felt like this isn't what I'm supposed to be doing. You know what I mean? My family's super well-adjusted. I am just a giant disappointment. You know what I mean? And, like, my grandfather, who I was very, very close with, had passed away about a year before that. And I just kept thinking, like, he's so pissed at me, you know what I mean? And, like, that messed with me for a while. Like, I just knew that, like, I was letting everybody who had ever cared about me down. But that was quickly, like, that thought was quickly supplanted with, where's the party at, you know? And then it was gone, and then I moved home, and I was staying with my parents for a little bit, and the reason I didn't end up going to prison is my parents took care of things like they always do, you know what I mean? Like, and that's kind of something I always expected. Like, you're just gonna fix it. I'm gonna, like, destroy all this stuff over here. I'm gonna dismantle this chip display and somebody's gonna clean it up, you know? That's just what I was used to. And so I lived with my parents for a little bit. My dad and stepmother, who, God bless them, have been together every single day, I kid you not, since their second date 80 million years ago. And they're, like, real happy and they love each other and it's great. I don't get it, but it works for them, right? And I was staying with them, and they wouldn't give me a key, which I thought was incredibly disrespectful, so I had to, like, come and go when they did, and they liked to go to bed at, like, 9. So it made it really hard for me to, like, go out and party and do what I like to do. And so my dad, he was like, you can have a couple beers here and there, and that, I don't know what that looks like. So I started, like, every single night to go to sleep, because at this point, like, I can't just go to sleep. I don't know what that means. I pass out, and I didn't know that until I got sober, and I would have, like, 2 or 3 of his beers, because I knew if I drank the entire case, like, that would be cause for concern, and there might be a lecture, and if anybody's ever met my dad, like, you don't want to deal with that. And so I would take this medication I had left over from a procedure I had done, and I would do that every night just to go to sleep, because at this point, my brain is trying to eat its way out of my head, you know what I mean? Like, it just goes and goes and goes, like, you're such a piece of shit, and what are you doing? You're not this person, and everybody's disappointed, and you're breaking your dad's heart, and you're killing your family, and why are you still alive? What are you doing every day, all day long? And the only way I knew how to shut that off was to get annihilated. And they moved me into this little spot in downtown St. Pete. It was super cool. I'm never going to get a DUI. It's going to be great because I can walk everywhere. That's what I thought. And I never did. You know what I mean? Like, I thought you had to have 80 million DUIs to be an alcoholic. Apparently, you can have 8 DUIs and not be an alcoholic. I don't know. I know somebody who has that experience. It's real weird. But that wasn't my experience. I've never had a DUI, but I like to get drunk and do really dumb things, like rob Walmart and get caught, you know, and, like, go drive places and get lost because I black out while I'm driving, you know, and I I didn't know what any of that stuff was. I remember, because while I was living in downtown St. Pete, it was getting really dark really fast, and it was getting really scary, and I didn't know what was happening. I really, really wanted this to be the answer, but I thought I was just falling asleep everywhere, like at the bar or driving, and I would, like, come to on I-75 somewhere. I didn't know where I was, and I'd, like, be running out of cell phone battery and running out of gas, and then I'd come to again in another county, and I didn't know what was happening, and I would start coming to with people in situations that I didn't know I had agreed to participate in, and, you know, I'd be, like, at a bar with a friend, and then I'd come to somewhere else completely hours later, and it really started to scare me. And on November 27th, 2009, I was with this guy, and, you know, it got real bad, you know, and I experienced that pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization that it talks in the big book. I had never wanted to die so bad as I did the next day. You know what I mean? Like, but I couldn't do it. Like, I just wanted everything to be over. It was so painful. And those moments when I wasn't drunk or wasn't wasted, it was so unbearable. My skin hurt. My inside was empty. And I had a conversation with my aunt, and I told her, you know, I don't know why, I told her everything that happened. Every gory, disgusting detail. And God bless that woman. I mean, Jesus, I don't know that I could handle somebody telling me that. I tried to tell one of my friends what happened, my normal friends, and she was like, earmuffs. But she asked me, you know, she put her partner on the phone, who I just went and saw, and she's got 17 years this weekend, and the time Barb had, I don't know, like 12, math's not my thing, but she asked me a couple questions that were really important. She said, Jesse, when you get drunk, do bad things happen? And at that moment, I couldn't remember the fun times. And it was so important that at that moment she asked me that question. Because I'm not going to kid you, I fucking love to drink. It is what I'm good at. For a long time, I thought that is what I was put on this earth to do. I was proud of it. I could drink any guy under the table. That was my call, my claim to fame. But at that moment, I couldn't remember those times. You know what I mean? Every time I drank, something horrible happened and I wanted to die. You know, and she said, if I go to a meeting, would you go with me? She didn't say you have to go to a meeting. She didn't say, do you want to go to a meeting? Because I probably say no, you know, but she said, if I went to a meeting, would you go with me? And I said, yes. Like I said, I say no to everything. I am so afraid of the world and what it's going to do to me. When I was in the seventh grade, this boy named Andrew Toledo asked me if I wanted to be his friend. And I said, no, I'm good. I have enough friends. Thank you. And all I've ever wanted was for you to like me. My whole life, you know. And I said yes when she asked me that question. And so we went to a meeting. And she suggested I go to 90 meetings in 90 days. And I get a sponsor. And I find, you know, and I was like, So, but I came here, right? And I heard what you guys talk about. And I had no idea how broken I was until I saw what it meant to actually be put back together. And I saw that in all of you. And I believed you. I was an alcoholic. To the bottom of my soul, I was an alcoholic. I knew I could never drink safely again. But I could probably smoke pot, and it's going to be okay. You know. And I remember I told her that when I went home from a meeting. I was like, so, yeah, for sure, alcoholic, all the way, can't drink, got it, that's here. You know, but I was like, I'm probably still going to smoke pot. Like, I'm probably going to do that. I remember telling her that, and that's what I would do. Like, I would come home from a meeting, and I would smoke weed out of her bedroom window. Because I was staying with my aunts for the first couple months I was sober, because, like, God knows I couldn't be home by myself. I would have lost it. And I had a bunch of booze at my house still. We found that out, like, 6 months later. I didn't think it was that big of a deal. Boyfriend did. But so that's what I would do, right? Like, I came here and I got a sponsor because somebody told me, you know, I really want you to get a sponsor because I want you to stay here. And I thought if I didn't have a sponsor, I was going to get kicked out of AA. Like, I thought that was my ticket, and I wasn't going to be allowed to be here if I didn't have one. And I needed to think that, you know what I mean? Like, I absolutely needed that because I got a sponsor. You know what I mean? I got a girl who had what I wanted. She was happy. You know what I mean? Like, I had a car and a place to live, but this girl was happy. You know what I mean? And I wanted that. I hadn't been happy for real in a long time. And I can put on a really good front, like a really, really good front. And, you know, we worked the steps, and I would go home and smoke pot every night. And I got involved, you know what I mean? I got involved in this home group and another home group and did all this other, like, AA service stuff. And I just, around, I think, like, I'd been coming around for about 9 months. And I was dating the man that would turn into my fiancé. And he'd broken up with me. And I decided, like, I was going to smoke pot one last time. And then I was going to stop because it was disrespectful to my friends in AA who were being so honest. And I was just like, you know, but I remember because I heard a friend. He was like, yeah, oh, my God, if I smoke, like, a blunt, this will happen, this will happen, this will happen. And then I'm in jail. And all I could think was, like, I'm, like, paying my bills and stuff. Like, I go home and clean my house when I get high. I don't really know. Maybe for you, you know? And so that's what I did. And, you know, at that point I decided that, like, I'm going to take the high road and I'm not going to do this anymore because we're honest, you know? But, like, I didn't tell anybody about it, you know? And I sponsored women and I had service commitments and I would do fourth and fifth steps with these sponsors, because I'd get a new sponsor about every year or so, because that had to be the problem. It had to be this relationship that I wasn't able to, like, really break through with these women, you know what I mean? I would see people have these amazing relationships with their sponsors, and I was just like, why do you not like me? You know, like, all that self-centered fear constantly still, no idea that it had anything to do with this giant lie blocking me off from God. And I would hear people in meetings talk about doing exactly what I was doing and being miserable. There was a guy that came to one of my home groups, I'm pretty sure he's still there, and he talked about exactly that. He was like, and it was killing me, and I wanted to die. And I was like, yeah, no, mm-mm, that's not what's happening here. Maybe for you, good thing you got honest, that's great. Not, no, mm-mm, I'm different. And that's kind of what I wanted, right? Like, I never really understood how desperately I wanted to be unique in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that shit will kill you. I'm sorry, that's my experience. Like, for 3 years, I sponsored women, I did service, I ran around AA like a crazy person doing the deal with this giant secret that I was convincing myself left, right, and sideways had absolutely nothing to do with the fact that I wanted to die. In AA, stone cold sober. You know, like, and I would, every time I'd hear it, and I had this sponsor, they'd be like, your secrets keep you sick, and I'd just be like, no, inside, like, not me, you dirty little liar, that's not what's happening here, I'm different, you know what I mean, and I wore that like a badge. Oh my God, I would run around here with this idea of, like, you don't know what I can do and stay sober, and it was awful. I was a horrible person. Oh my Lord. I treated a person I love the most on this planet like shit, you know, and I thought it was okay, there's nothing wrong with what I'm doing, I'm not hurting anybody, and I have come to discover that I have an incredibly high threshold for pain, incredibly, you know what I mean, because I don't know how I didn't kill myself, but that's what would happen, right, it's like every time I would get in pain, I knew I couldn't drink, you know what I mean, I absolutely knew I couldn't drink, but I would think about crashing my car into a brick wall, you know, up until like a year and a half ago, absolutely, and finally, at one point, it came out at 5 a.m. in an argument, like, I think I should change my sobriety date, no, okay, you know, and that's what it was like, though, is I thought I was going to get kicked out of AA, I thought I was going to be judged, I thought I was going to be all this stuff, and what happened is my whole entire world split open. You know what I mean? Like, I had developed a relationship with a God of my understanding, for sure. There is absolutely no way on this earth I would have lasted that long had I not. But that relationship was, like, catapulted into something I didn't know was possible. You know what I mean? Like, I have this faith and this unshakable reliance upon God. And it's not perfect all the time. You know what I mean? Like, I try to take back the reins and think that, like, God's not going to take care of me, whatever, because, like, I want a shirt or, you know, something stupid that I think I'm not going to get, you know, but I'm always okay, you know what I mean, and I remember my sponsor, when I told her, she was like, you're going to be able to help so many people, and I was like, okay, fuck you, you know what I mean, like, no, I'm not, I'm so uncomfortable, I want to, like, scream, cry all the time, I think everybody hates me and is judging me, you know, but you know, one of my really, really close friends had the same situation, and she lied about it for like a month. And another girl at a meeting shared about the exact same experience. And it wasn't like all of a sudden these people were crawling out of the woodwork. It was just that I was aware. You know what I mean? Like, for the first time in my sobriety, I really understood what it meant to be uniquely qualified to help somebody else. And that's what we have here. You know what I mean? Like, we are uniquely qualified to help other alcoholics. We can do stuff that doctors and shrinks and lawyers and clergymen can't do. You hear what I mean? We have our experience. And that's what I love so much about AA, is that nobody's telling me, like, oh, you got to take this pill and pray these prayers and you're going to get better. They're telling me, this is where I fucked up. This is what I did. This is what I felt like. And these are the actions I took to get through it. You know, like what Jeremiah was talking about, those life moments that show up, we're taught how to handle them. We have a suit of armor here, and it's made up of tools, you know, that we can use when life happens. And, I mean, life has happened, and it's been awesome, and it's been terrible, you know what I mean? Like, but I've come through every moment of adversity, every moment of uncomfortability. I feel like that's a word we use here. But really cool things have happened, too. I have an amazing relationship with my mother. You know, when I got sober, I wouldn't call her that. I called her by her first name, and I was absolutely resolved to the idea that she would never meet her grandchildren if I ever had them. And, she called me today to wish me happy birthday, and I was just like, I love you, Mommy. You know what I mean? And that's not anything I ever wanted, and I didn't do that. You know what I mean? And I got engaged a couple months ago, and my dad, who makes me so crazy, it's not funny, he wants to talk every Sunday about this wedding. And, like, it's, like, almost a year from now, and nothing has changed in 7 days, but he wants to talk about this stuff. You know what I mean? And I've gotten to watch such miracles here in this room. You know what I mean? Like, I've watched women grow up, girls become women, little scared boys become men, respected members of society, and be able to pass that on to others. And I get, like, I'm not an emotional person at all, and it annoys my fiance a great deal because I'm very rigid and I don't show emotion, but, like, this is something that I care so much about. I absolutely love Alcoholics Anonymous with every fiber in my being because it's given me something I didn't even know I wanted. I didn't know I was missing this. You know what I mean? And I'm not perfect at it. I suck a lot. You know what I mean? Like, I'm still a really bad person. I just try every day to do a little bit better than I did yesterday. You know what I mean? And with the help of you guys and with a higher power and with these practical tools, I can strive to be a better person. You know what I mean? And I fail constantly. But I have women like Katie in my life to show me what it means to get up and try again. You know, I have an incredible sponsor and a great support network of women that I treasure. You know what I mean? And I don't know. I love this group and I love AA. And thank you so much for Katie for having me speak. And I do want to say I'm not an expert or anything on sobriety or alcoholism or any of that stuff. My friend Ryan says that I'm just an example that this program works. So if you didn't get anything out of anything I said or I offended you or anything like that, just stick around. Talk to somebody after the meeting. Get a sponsor. There's about a bajillion different experiences in AA, and I'm just one of them. Thank you.